The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
The Sports Bar with Danger and Battaglia.
It's an advantageous matchup for the Bills defense, but I think it comes down to like any other game, like winning that battle up front and him, and then offensively, you've got to score probably 24 plus points. So I think it's a tough road game. I think Sean historically gets his team up to play in those West Coast games.
Mike Danger.
So we were trying to figure out, make heads and tails of what Seattle is, and they're a first place team. They're kind of like the Bills. They've had some head scratchers, but I don't know that anybody that follows the Seahawks can really explain. What are the Seahawks and what are the Bills getting themselves into? And for some reason, why do I not feel comfortable about this spot for Buffalo?
Gene Battaglia.
Some of these injuries, if the Bills are down two linebackers potentially, how would this look going against this offense? Actually, the Seattle offense puts a lot up through the air. Seattle is a mystery team to us, but maybe this is just a game where it kind of starts from within. How do you start quicker for the Buffalo Bills? That's going to be the top storyline.
95.7 FM and AM 950 The Fan. Rochester.
We'll get a World Series preview from our buddy Jim Riley at the Barreled Up Podcast. He's stopping by the sports bar here in about 20 minutes or so. We appreciate you stopping by. However, you're listening, 95.7 FM, AM 950. You can get us on your smart device when you ask it to play 95.7 The Fan. Hear us where we sound our best. The free to download Odyssey app and check out our video stream on our YouTube channel at The Fan Rochester. Also on Twitch at The Fan Rochester. Our library of episodes as well. We have a podcast library of thousands of episodes for you to check out wherever you get your podcasts. We encourage the Odyssey app. And if you go back to earlier this week, we had a conversation with Nate Geary, the Buffalo Bills Radio Network. You remember this on Monday.
Right.
And I teed him up because I saw him put this out after the game against the Titans. And I really wanted him to make his case as to why Josh Allen should be considered the favorite to win MVP. Now, I think earlier in the season, through three games at least, we all looked at Josh Allen's play and we're like, this is it. This is the year. He's going to be the MVP. Look at how great he's played. Now, the Houston game was a bit of a stinker. You lose the way you lose to Baltimore. And now, since that conversation on Monday with Nate, you got Lamar Jackson throwing five touchdowns, a near-perfect passer rating against the Bucs on Monday night, elevating him to the favorite now to win his third MVP. And I know a lot of people will point to Josh Allen not throwing a pick so far this year. And that's obviously great, considering that in the last three seasons, Gene, he's had games that truly derailed any chance he had of winning the award. Let me take you back to 2021. You had the Jags game. You had the blowout loss to the Colts in 22. Man, we all remember, we still remember that disastrous Vikings loss at home, the goal line fumble, and the overtime interception. That ended his bid for MVP that season. Last season, you could point to the Week 1 performance at the Jets. You could look at the Broncos' Monday night loss, the game that got his offensive coordinator fired. There's a lot of football left to be played. I'm not saying he doesn't deserve to be in the conversation. If the Bills go on a run, he will be in the conversation. But Lamar, at this point, in my opinion, would really have to slip up. He would have to cost his team games, similar to how Josh Allen's turnovers the last three seasons had cost his team games in order to loosen his stranglehold on winning his third MVP.
Maybe. There's a little bit of... With any MVP conversation, we just acknowledge there's always recency bias because we're just coming off that Monday night. Wow, that's fantastic. We're going to see games where Lamar Jackson has nothing to do with the Ravens, where he'll just hand it off to Derrick Henry and they'll win football games. To me, I think Nate hit this right in the head. It's always moving the goalposts with Josh Allen. Like, well, he turns the ball over. And, hey, like, you ruled him out right off the top last year. But in reality, when the Bills made their run down the start, like, he was one of the best. But because we had already mentally ruled him out. Pop quiz, Mike Danger. How many MVPs did Tom Brady win? Best quarterback of all time. I think we all can kind of universally agree. How many did he win?
Did he get zero MVPs?
He won
one MVP?
He won three.
Three MVPs.
But he won the Super Bowl MVP five times.
Yeah.
But the MVP, it's who is the quarterback for the number one seed. I don't know if we'll ever get to a point where you'll vote another position because, again, presenting something against the Lamar argument, what if Derrick Henry continues to pile up yards like this?
His last MVP... Adrian Peterson,
correct.
Non-quarterback?
Yeah, 2017.
Okay. Yeah, it's, wow, 2017. That's almost like what the Chiefs are rostering on offense now, the 2017 All-Stars with Kareem Hunt and DeAndre Hopkins and Travis Kelce. I understand that there is some recency, and Lamar just looked like he took over the game on Monday night. But if we're going to
2012, I'm sorry, 2012.
Oh, I was going to say 2017.
Yeah, 2012 was the year he went over 2,000.
And that was the last time you had a non-quarterback win league MVP.
2012, correct.
So over
I'm
10
wrong
years.
Yep.
12 years. With Lamar, if there's a game or two that costs him the one seed down the stretch that he, you know, his turnovers, you can directly correlate the turnovers to them losing the game. And I think with Josh Allen, man, that Vikings game still stings, right? We think about that, like, what happened? The goal line fumble, the overtime pick, like,
well, goal line fumble, okay, like things like that happen. I actually have a bigger problem with the overtime pick because he had it in the back of his mind.
Throw to Diggs,
yeah. Not only to win the game, but how I want to write the script. Like, we're gonna do this against his former team. Like, I don't need Josh Allen to be playing at MVP level. I need him just to continue to play smart football. The Houston game was a stinker, but he didn't turn it over. So
he didn't turn it over, but he didn't play well.
No, he didn't play well, but you can win games and not play well. You can also...
But you didn't win that game.
Right.
And a lot of people say, well, you didn't win that game because of poor coaching and the way it was managed. And he came alive in the second half, but... That game, statistically, was not a good game for Josh Allen.
Like that game, like the Tennessee game, you won because they're a bad opponent. You played that first half against Houston, you couldn't recover,
mm-hmm.
and you were also on the road. I think it's the MVP conversation. Danger is also like we could roll this back in the first week in December and laugh. Because it's so fluid. There was a point last year we're talking about Dak Prescott as the MVP. And then he comes to Buffalo and then nothing. Yeah. So, like, all it takes is one game. Like, nope. And I guarantee you there's some quarterback right now that all of a sudden is going to be in the top three at the end of the year that we just don't recognize that they're going to come on down the stretch.
Jameis Winston, step on up and get your long-deserved award.
What are the comeback player of the year odds for Jameis Winston? Like, all of a sudden, if the Browns start to win games and we're feeling
I don't think he's eligible. I don't think he's eligible.
No?
He didn't have a hardship or come back from an injury. Or isn't that the new guidelines that the AP put out there?
Right. So, like, basically, the way they... You stunk for your whole career, now you're good. Like Sam Darnold, say, for instance.
Right. Sam Darnold, I think, is still the favorite, even though... The guidelines that the AP has set forth, I think they have to make it very, very clear because DeMar Hamlin was robbed last year of comeback player of the year by Joe Flacco. Joe Flacco, who didn't come back from any injury, just was kind of irrelevant until he got to Cleveland and made some noise and got them into the postseason. And the next thing you know, he's winning the comeback play. And everybody's, even Joe Flacco is like, no, come on. What are we doing here, guys? So I think while a Jameis or... I mean, I'm saying Jameis, he hasn't even, you know, really, hasn't started a game yet for Cleveland, or Sam Darnold, while they make a lot of sense, like, oh my God, look what they did with their new teams. Look what they did. No, it'll be like a guy who came back from an injury, or mm-hmm. somebody who was injured early and came back late, whatever it is. It's not going to be who deserves the award the most.
The following up by Rent from yesterday, Danger. Opening night tonight in the NBA for many teams. We've got 10 games, including the Sixers. And Joel Embiid is not going to be playing tonight on opening night. I know Paul George is not going to give it a go, but at least George has some sort of injury excuse. Embiid played in the Olympics, but now we're talking about the injury he had back in...
We have to manage it. We have to manage this injury.
Here's my take, Danger. If the NBA keeps this stuff up, maybe MLB rises up to reclaim being the second most popular sport in the country. Now, you think that's not possible? All right, well, what are we exactly judging this against? Because I'm looking like, okay, what would it take? Would it surprise you to learn that in 2023, the NBA grows $14 billion? That's a lot of money. They've got all this money. Major League Baseball grossed $14 billion. $14 billion for baseball. Now, nowhere close to the NFL, certainly, but here's the opportunity, all right? Whatever cliche you want to use, the oven is hot, the pizza, whatever it is. Dodgers, Yankees. I want to see Monday night's numbers, Danger. I want to see, could we actually have baseball beat the NFL in the TV rating Monday night? Giants-Steelers, the Monday night game.
Monday night would be game
three. In the Bronx.
In the Bronx. Giants-Steelers in Pittsburgh. Not a real compelling matchup, but two teams that you would think would draw a pretty good number.
I'm saying the New York market is not watching this game. They're not. You're going to choose Brian Daboll over Juan Soto and Aaron Judge.
What's what's the best metric to determine the popularity of a league?
That's the question I have. Is it the money? Is it the TV number? Is it the under 35? Because honestly, like if I'm going to read you under 35 numbers, I mean it's just going to be it's going to be.
Well, that's actually surprising to me that Major League Baseball grosses more than the NBA grosses. And when I hear that, then I want to go to, despite the TV ratings or the audience of who might watch a World Series or a particular baseball game versus the NFL or the NBA, I would actually say then Major League Baseball is probably the second most popular.
But you can't say that because then if I'm going to like say TV ratings or globally, okay, that's also part of the conversation. And baseball's trying to do this. When they did the World Baseball Classic, that was really cool. But we were late to the party, I felt like. It wasn't until the last game where we tuned in. But basketball globally? The Olympics, everybody is playing this game across the globe. Not everybody is playing baseball. It's a debate here. You and I didn't grow up when baseball was number one, like it was the NFL when we were growing up. But you and I yesterday identified, when did that kind of change? And to me, it was Jordan and then a strike in the 90s, and then people kind of went away. And then, oh, by the way, these guys were juicing. I'm saying that, well, part of the reason baseball slipped a little bit was because of PR. And it brings it back to Joel Embiid. You can't play opening night at home for your fans.
Yeah, I don't like it at all.
I hate that.
I think it's a soft look. I think it's a bad look for not just Joel Embiid, not just the Sixers, but for the NBA. And every you're fighting, you're clawing, you're scratching to get our attention. I want to see greatness. I want to see the impossible happen. And it's more likely that I see that when your best players are out there. You're injured. But you weren't injured. Like we see through it. They're very shady with how they go about these injuries, protecting these players, holding these players out. It makes me not want to go to an NBA game. It makes me not want to invest in the NBA because I don't know the product that I'm going to get. It's an inconsistent product. Some nights the NBA is fantastic, and you're going to get close games, and you're going to see the best. They're shooting the lights out of the arena. And some nights you're going to get guys sitting out because of a schedule, or I've got to maintain this injury. I got to come back from this injury. What injury? You were fine just a couple months ago.
Oh, but now we have the rule that if you miss so many games, you're not eligible for the MVP. Okay.
Whatever. Can I get a verdict on this move, Gino?
Mm-hmm.
How about bye weeks in fantasy football? I'm not talking about like the NFL schedule. I'm saying like if we have to suffer through the NFL's bye week gauntlet, let's make the fantasy game even more like the real thing. Give every manager a week to sit back, assess, and decide what the best lineup should be for their team moving forward. Bye weeks in fantasy football.
Hate it. Next. Like what? Like honestly, like,
I can't believe like, you would start why, with no. That's no. Just so out of character for you.
No.
Why? Who brought this up?
I'm bringing it up. I wanted to know if this is something that makes sense.
See, like, we're supposed to say, oh, okay. No, that's a stupid idea, Danger. Like, you would not want to play fantasy football for a week.
Yeah, just to step back, assess.
Well, you can do that.
Reclaim my life.
You can do that at any point, not in our lineup. I preferably do it when you're playing me. I would like that a lot.
Right, because that's the only way you can beat me.
Oh,
I don't know. I just thought it was, you know, if you're like I am, a commissioner of a league, I might flow it out to the other managers, see what they say. How about a bye week, boys? You just scatter a bye week throughout the and you don't have to worry about your lineup that week. Just take the week off. Reclaim some of your time. Give it back. Reassess. You can still make moves, but your guys are going to get some rest.
You could do that theoretically. It's called daily fantasy and take a day off or a week off or whatever it is. I have a take for you, Danger.
Tell me.
Okay, so the Chiefs this week playing the Raiders. Are the Chiefs going to be undefeated when they come to Buffalo? Here's their schedule. Tampa Bay Monday night, but we know that, well, what are the Buccaneers going to look like at that point? That's on the 4th. The Chiefs at home against Denver. That's it. Are the Chiefs going to be a 9-0 team when they enter Orchard Park?
So they've got the Raiders, they've got the Bucs, they got the Broncos. I think one of those teams gets them.
In Arrowhead.
All three of those are at Arrowhead?
No, the Raiders is not. That's in Vegas.
Might as well be Arrowhead.
Right.
Arrowhead
and
West.
The other two are in Arrowhead.
Okay. I'm not sure which one of those teams will get them, but I think one of those teams will get them.
I'm hoping, because I look at the rest of the schedule. Oh, my gosh. They should be the number one seed here, which would be interesting. Like, you after Buffalo, they go to Carolina. Ooh. They host the Raiders. Ooh. I know the Raiders got them last year. Sure. They host the Chargers. And I don't think I'll give Harbaugh a pass for this year. They go to Cleveland. I don't see him tripping up there. Okay. Houston going there. But again, as we talk with PJ Glasser, is Houston really all that? Kansas City going to Pittsburgh. Kansas City going to Denver.
NFL is weird, man. One of those games, they'll trip up on one of the divisional games. The Chargers will get them. The Raiders will get them.
They're 15-2. Is my point
possible?
Yeah,
it's highly possible. They sure feel like they're going to be the one seed because even if Baltimore wins out, they still have those two losses on their ledger, and one of them being to Kansas City, so they would lose that tiebreaker. They should be the one seed.
Goes back to my point. Bills are better off as a 4 than a 3, so you avoid Baltimore.
Yeah. You're gonna have to if you're gonna get to the Super Bowl, you're gonna have to beat Baltimore at some point.
Let somebody else beat Baltimore. Let it better. I'm sure there's teams that match up better against Baltimore than Buffalo.
Well, yeah, we saw some warts, some ugly, yeah. Ugly warts on that game. Boy, let's get to Jim Riley and get a World Series preview. The Barreled Up Podcast, Ball Cap Sports on YouTube. Jim, our buddy, we'll talk Dodgers and Yankees and some other off-season news and notes that are happening around Major League Baseball next on The Fan Rochester.
You're listening to The Sports Bar with Danger and Battaglia. 95.7 FM and AM 950. The Fan Rochester.
The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
The Fan Rochester Sports Update.
It is a lengthy injury report for the Buffalo Bills on this Wednesday. Middle linebacker Terrell Bernard was excused today for personal reasons, although Bernard also listed with ankle and pectoral injuries. Not practicing today, wide receiver Curtis Samuel and defensive lineman Dewan Smoot. Also, Daquan Jones given a Veterans Day of rest. And Coach Sean McDermott says the D-line is key.
True every week. Every week it's a must. You know, that's how the game is. That's where the game is won every week, up front and defensive line, offensive line. You know, being great with our technique, being great with the strain. You know, you talk about their defensive line. They've got some guys that can flat out rush the passer, and very impressed by the tape.
Kansas City trading for DeAndre Hopkins today. It's a fifth-round pick that could become a fourth. We got the Amherst tonight. They're hosting Cleveland. Gene Battaglia and the Sports Leader, the Fan Rochester.
Pull up a stool and join us. 585-866-4FAN. 866-4326. The Sports Bar with Danger and Battaglia on the Sports Leader. 95.7 FM and AM 950. The Fan, Rochester.
You can hear our next guest. He's the host of the Barreled Up Odyssey exclusive podcast and the free to download Odyssey app. Also, Ball Cap Sports channel on YouTube. Covering Major League Baseball and stopping by the Sports Bar with regularity. Roots in the 585, our buddy Jim Riley stops by. And Jim, I feel like everybody I talk to about the World Series is saying kind of the same thing. Like, oh, well, it was always going to be the winner of that Dodgers-Padres series. And not really giving the Yankees any sort of chance. Do you feel the same way about the Dodgers coming into this series? And what needs to happen for the Yankees to get this done?
Well, and thank you guys for having me back. I do appreciate it. It's always fun. I think that the natural instincts are to go with the Dodgers. You've got Shohei Ohtani. You've got Mookie Betts. You have an unstoppable lineup. You have a bullpen that has been lights out. So it makes sense to just sort of jump on with the Dodgers. But the Yankee team definitely cannot be overlooked. You know, one element of this club that really has not fired off and could level up this team is Aaron Judge. I think we have 5 or 6 hits in this postseason combined. He had 3 hits in the ALCS. Now 2 of them were home runs. But what if Judge goes out and catches fire and hits 4 or 5 home runs in the World Series, and Stanton keeps doing what he's doing, and Volpe and Glaber and Soto? There's a new level that the Yankees can unlock that I think a lot of people are not thinking about. And that is, what if Aaron Judge goes off? Because we haven't seen that yet.
Yeah, I'm looking at the Dodgers pitching. And yes, they have so much talent, but I think there's a hole here. Tell me if you agree, because you get Flaherty and Yamamoto 1 and 2. And I don't think there's any dispute. I mean, the Yankees are going to have their work cut out for them. Walker Buehler against the Padres, not great. And I thought against the Mets he lived a little bit dangerously. Yes, he won, but I think that's a little bit concerned. Then are you going to the bullpen game? And then if you're going to the bullpen game in Game 4, or do you do that in Game 3? Because then how does the series line up? Can the Dodgers actually roll out bullpen games and get away with it in this series, Jim?
Yeah, that's what's scary about this team, is they can, and because their bullpen is so deep. The Yankees do not have that in their favor. The Yankees, in my analyzation of this thing, really only have a couple of guys that they can trust to go out there and get the job done, and the Dodgers have 6 of those guys. And when they do the bullpen days, I mean, they have guys that they can insert there and get extra outs and carry over into other innings. Like, you know, a guy like Landon Knack may be involved in the bullpen day. He can get 2 or 3 innings in there. If you keep the pitch count down, Ryan Brazier could go an extra batter or two. So they can navigate it, and they've been able to navigate it to their advantage. But they're all pitching so well that it's a strength. It's a significant strength for this team. So to deploy it one or two times in this World Series, a bullpen day, makes sense for the Dodgers. They're so deep in the bullpen, and that is a lopsided advantage that they have that the Yankees unfortunately don't.
Jim, I thought you had a pretty entertaining ALCS. I think the NLCS was kind of, you were dealing with blowouts in pretty much every game. How important do you think it is? I mean, baseball stands to grow the game quite a bit here with a lot of stars on display and your two biggest markets hosting. I mean, is it important for this to be a seven-game series, a competitive series for baseball to get the kind of growth that we remember baseball having when we were growing up, to have that kind of popularity return to the game?
Yeah, I mean, all the better if this goes seven. And the more opportunity you have to put your product and to put these players, put these stars. I mean, we have, in this game, no question about it, there's seven, at least, future Hall of Famers across these two teams in this World Series. So the longer you have those players in front of the fan base and new fans and young fans, and two of them are just, they're generational with Ohtani and Soto. So the more you can have that out in front of them, in front of the fans, the better. The two major markets, there's a couple different elements here. This is obviously, we're going to see TV ratings records with this, right? Coming up with the two major markets, with Japan, from a global perspective. This is going to probably be the biggest World Series in the history of baseball. And I'm not just, trying to hyperbolize this thing. I really think we're going to see the biggest ratings. But from a rivalry standpoint, too, dusting off the Dodgers and Yankees World Series, we haven't seen this since 1981. I think in the late 70s, early 80s, they played three or four times, and then all those times in the 50s and 60s. This is great for the history of baseball and that element, and when you consider the New York and the L.A. element here.
I'm going to give you an X factor, at least I think, for the Yankees. What are your thoughts, Jim, on Nestor Cortes? So Nestor Cortes, for folks who haven't been paying attention, he's been out since mid-September. Really, he isn't 100%. And actually, the way I kind of understand it, he could be risking further injury by actually going out there. But
right.
If he's added to the roster and a lefty going gets that would be something coming out of the Yankee bullpen there. Your thoughts there? Could they actually get something out of this, or is this not a risk not worth taking, in your opinion?
Well, I'll say this. I don't think you'll need him for long periods of time. I almost feel like if I'm strategizing this, if I'm Aaron Boone, I want to have as many options to throw at Shohei Ohtani as possible. And let's say Tim Hill gets the first crack late in game one and he gives up a home run. Well, I probably don't want to go back to Hill again. I want to try either Meza or Cortes. So it feels like you're giving yourself another option to attack Shohei Ohtani with, because you're going to try to handle him very, very carefully. And right now it's just Meza and Hill as the lefties. Cortes is the extra guy. So I don't know if you'll see any long stretches of innings or pitches from him. It'll probably be strategic around Ohtani and maybe Freddie Freeman and Max Muncy. They've got so many lefty bats, and you got to have lefty arms.
We had you on last week talking about Kiki Hernandez. The idea that, my gosh, he has more postseason home runs than Bryce Harper. The Dodgers' bottom of the lineup, guys like Tommy Edman and Max Muncy is in the bottom lineup, guys that have been delivering, is this actually sustainable, or could this actually go quiet here, in your opinion?
They have so many bats, and when you think about what they're carrying over from the NLCS, yes, Max Muncy and Tommy Edman and Kike had fantastic NLCS against the Mets. But what you didn't see is you didn't see Teoscar Hernandez. You didn't see Will Smith. So even if, let's say, Tommy Edman goes cold and Max Muncy goes cold, Well, that could be equally sort of countered or remedied if Teoscar Hernandez or Will Smith picks up. Not like 1 through 9, this team is everyone's on fire and everyone's operating on all cylinders. They're coming into this thing with a couple guys that had a cool series. And if they heat up, I mean, then this thing gets really out of control. Or it makes up for maybe a couple guys that cool off.
And what about the injuries to both teams here? I know that the Freddie Freeman ankle has been something everybody's been monitoring all postseason.
Yeah, that ankle is definitely a problem. I've had ankle problems, you know, throughout my life. And, you know, if they had the DH spot open, he would be DHing. He would not be playing first base. Just that quick twitch motion from going from set and ready for the ball to feel, you know, getting your foot on the base and just constantly all game long, every time the ball is on the ground, having to move like that for an ankle that is as severely sprained as Freeman, that's a problem. But he can still hit. So that's where you're kind of choosing your spots, and Dave Roberts has been doing that so far. The question is really, is this layover? You get, you know, 4 or 5 days off here. That can be huge for Freddie Freeman because you can ice it, you can get it down, you can get off it, you can get the inflammation down and get off it. And by the time we play on Friday, it'll probably feel, I mean, it'll be sore, but it'll feel a lot better. And that can keep him out there longer. It's just a matter of if he aggravates it, and if he aggravates it, how severely could it be? But they're 3-0 in this postseason without him. I don't think you can sustain that. And I think if you want to win the World Series, it's better if you have him in there. But it's been such a deep lineup that they've been able to work around this Freddie Freeman issue. We haven't really seen Freddie Freeman have an impact in this postseason. That's an area I talked about, how the Yankees could unlock Aaron Judge, which would take them to a new level. If Freddie Freeman's ankle is good and he starts hitting like Freddie Freeman that we know, the Dodgers could unlock a Freddie Freeman level that we haven't seen yet. This is going to be a great World Series. There's so many different avenues to weave around with storylines and players and everything. It's really exciting.
Yeah, there's another storyline, too. And if you were looking at all the numbers that the Dodgers have ever retired, there's only one guy, one number that is not in the Hall of Fame. That's Fernando Valenzuela. We learned of his passing this morning. Just your thoughts on Fernando mania there. And the one thing I learned today that maybe I just forgotten, because you talk about the Dodgers of Fernando's era. We remember, you know, the last time the Yankees and Dodgers played. Well, what got the Dodgers to the World Series, I'm talking about in the World Series, was 1981, and that was the Blue Monday game at Rick Monday with a home run in Montreal. They don't win that game if Fernando allows one run over 8 innings there. We forget about that part of the story.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that he did just for Venezuelan baseball, you think about how much of a baseball factory that is these days, so many talented players coming out of that part of the country. You don't know if it's like that now, if he doesn't sort of spark an interest in baseball in that part of the country. And then just from a Dodgers perspective, a huge figurehead in the history of that organization, to lose him young, only the age of 63, is certainly saddened. And, you know, having it happen on the heels of this World Series getting started, I mean, obviously I would expect, you know, tributes to be paid and him be remembered fondly. It's sad, the passing of Fernando, and I think a lot of people are probably dusting off some memories that they have of, you know, Fernando. I was still rather young when Fernando mania was going on. So personally, firsthand memories, I don't have many of them, but all the stories that I've heard, just a monumental figure in Dodgers history, a history that is full of them. For him to stand out is something special.
Hey, Jim, both of these teams always have high expectations. You have massive payrolls. You have huge stars. With those expectations come pressure. I don't know if one team has more pressure on them than the other. Is there an advantage for one team who maybe is going into the series with a little bit more to prove, a little bit more pressure? Is it the Dodgers because of Ohtani, or is it the Yankees just because they're the Yankees?
Well, the Dodgers come into this having, you know, missed out on winning the World Series after being the favorite year in and year out. You know, they won it in 2020, but so many fans don't want to give them credit for it because it was the pandemic shortened season. So this is a Dodger team that there is a lot riding on winning the World Series, but I feel like the pressure to actually win it might be a little bit more for the Yankees because of all the pressure. It's been such a long time, and you know, you've got Aaron Boone that's always feeling the pressure to win this thing. You've got maybe the only year that Juan Soto is there. I think that there's a good chance he's back, but this is your 1 year with Soto. It's not like Ohtani is on a 1 year contract and he could walk at the end of the year. If this doesn't go your way, if you're the Dodgers, most of these guys are going to be back next year and you'll go at it again. But it's so hard to get here, as we've clearly seen, because we have number one versus number one. We don't get that most of the time. Like, that is a rare thing for the best team in the National League to go up against the best team in the American League record-wise. So to get here is really special. I would lean Yankees with a little bit more pressure. Again, they both have a ton of weight on their shoulders heading into this thing. But with the Yankees, with the caveat that this is maybe the only Juan Soto season, I'll tip the scales towards the Yankees there.
Jim, before I let you go, I want to get your thoughts on a few other stories here in baseball. When the Mets kind of went out, I'm like, well, I'm not upset, not at all, right? They exceeded expectation. The whole ride was a lot of fun. It gets you excited for next year. So, like, all right, I'm going to look up the Mets schedule, and I'm looking this up, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, like, baseball has a typo on this. They spelled Atlanta A-T-H. Oh, wait a second. That's not Atlanta. They're saying the Athletics. What are we calling this team? Are they going to be Vegas? Are they Sacramento? Or are they just simply going to be the Athletics baseball team?
They are going to be the Athletics. That's it. No city attached.
Oh, geez.
That's it. They are a team without a city. No, that is the story. That is from, that was in the LA Times, that they are not going to they're not going to be the Sacramento Athletics. They're not going to be the California Athletics or the Golden State Athletics. They're just going to be the Athletics.
Wow, that'll get people fired up to go out and buy tickets there in 100-degree heat in Sacramento, right?
Right. Well, and this is going to be for 3, maybe 4 years because the deal is for 3 with an option for a 4th if the Vegas stadium's lagging behind. So it's, you know, it kind of reminds me of in the NFL how Washington didn't have a team name, so they were just the Washington Football Club. Now it's almost in reverse where we've got the Athletics, but no city attached. Mm. But for Washington, that was 1 or 2 years. We're looking at 3 or 4 years of this with the Athletics. So by the time they go to Vegas, are they going to change the name? Because they're going to need to switch it up because everyone's just going to call them the Athletics. No one's going to be used to calling them the insert city Athletics anymore. So, yeah, kind of bizarre. Just another bizarre wrinkle in this whole Athletics, Oakland, Sacramento, Las Vegas situation.
And, Jim, what about the unfortunate situation with the Trop, and what will the Rays be looking at doing here this upcoming season, not really having their traditional home?
You know, nobody really knows. There's a lot of speculation about where they could land. There's a lot of, down in Florida, in St. Pete and Tampa and Clearwater and Sarasota, there's a ton of spring training facilities down there. So there's baseball fields everywhere, but they are aligned with other organizations. They're aligned with Philadelphia. They're aligned with Baltimore. They're aligned with Detroit. So, New York, there's the Tampa Yankees. That's a low-A Yankees affiliate. But I can't imagine the Rays are going to want to go and play in a Yankee stronghold and get heckled by Yankee fans. So, and again, these ballparks hold like 6,000, 7,000, 8,000 capacity. That doesn't work either. It's really confusing. I don't think the Trop's going to be playable. The material that they need to rebuild that roof doesn't just magically arrive at your doorstep and you start putting it up there. And on top of it, you had the standing water issue with no drainage for the field. I think, this is my best guess, is that they will end up in Orlando. at ESPN's Worldwide Sports Complex. The only hang-up is that there are a ton of youth tournaments that they'll either have to work around or cancel or reschedule, but I think that's the only option. I can't see them leaving Florida. It's kind of funny to think of them going to Oakland and then they're the Oakland Rays, but that takes all the money to California. Yeah. They're not going to go to Montreal because then that takes the money out of the country. I think they stay in Florida. I think they go to Orlando. It's only an hour and a half away, so the fan base can still drive over to it. And who knows, for if you live on the right side of Tampa, it may actually be easier for you to get over to Orlando than it is to St. Pete with all those causeways. I think that it ends up being Orlando and the youth tournaments that gets blown out because of a Rays weekend home series, so be it. The Rays got to play somewhere.
Have you ever been to Florida in July? I have.
I don't want to play games outside.
No, I mean, we're complaining about, oh my gosh, the A's are going to play on AstroTurf. What's going on here, field turf or whatever it is? I mean, that's got to be an issue here too. And they call the Tampa Bay Lightning the Lightning because, well, I mean, basically every day you're going to get some pop-up something there, Jim.
That is definitely an issue, and that's why it's good that this is a one-year problem. Because if this is going to be a multi-year issue, they would have to figure something out. They would have to find an indoor spot. I think they're just going to have to deal with it, because indoor facilities, as far as availability for the Rays, I don't think they've got it. I think they're going to have to deal with it. And figure it out, because there's no options. I do feel confident that the Trop will be good to go for 2026. It's just 2025 looks like it's going to be a wash.
But they got the new stadium opening up soon too, don't they? I mean, would that be the reopening up the Trop for a year or no?
28, I think.
28? They were supposed to begin construction on the new stadium at the beginning of 2025. With the hopes that it would be open in 2028. So this is still a ways off. That's a problem. I mean, so now you're Tampa and you're trying to figure out how you're going to get this done. You've got all of the materials and all the manpower and all the construction equipment and men that you have for the new park that you're building. And at the same time, you have to repair the Trop. It's an unfortunate mess for Tampa.
Yeah, they were two games below 500. They're going to suck next year, Jim. And like how are they going to attract any? You know what? Do I really, for that matter, the A's there? Like those two teams, you're only going there if you don't have any other options. I would see it.
Well, they've always been a team that kind of rebuilds from within, and if they make any free agent moves, it's sort of that savvy move. Think of Zach Eflin. Zach Eflin went to Tampa. Nobody else really had much of an interest. They paid him the most that you're used to seeing Tampa pay. I think it was like $17 million or $18 million a year for Zach Eflin. So they're not a big destination as it is, and they don't really sort of swim on that side of the pool. They do a lot of it from within. I think Tampa's going to actually be very good next year, which will be interesting to see the eyes that are sort of become fixated on what's going on in Tampa, because their troubles this year was they had their three best pitchers injured all year. They all started to slowly trickle back in as the season went on. But next year they'll start with full strength in the rotation, some really good bats, some incredibly young talent. Tampa's going to be in the mix next year, which will only bring more attention to this whole stadium mess once we're in season. Maybe they get the Trop ready for the Rays in the postseason of 2025. Maybe they can have it ready by then.
Jim, gracious with your time, as always, to join us here in the sports bar. I want to give you the floor to make sure you can tell us more about Barreled Up and about Ball Cap.
Yeah, thank you, guys. As always, I love coming on and talking. Check out the podcast on the Odyssey app, Barreled Up Sports, talking about everything going on as far as the postseason goes, previewing the World Series, breaking down matchups, talking through it, all the ins and outs, and as soon as the World Series is done, we'll go into off-season mode with free agents and trades. And literally the same thing is happening over on the YouTube channel. It's just you get to see me. Same kind of coverage, same talking everything. It's just you have the visual aspect. So if you want to see my face as you're listening to my words, YouTube is the place to go.
We were having this discussion before you came on real quick. Second most popular sport, and what is the metric? Because I don't know, like, this is an opportunity for baseball maybe to reclaim the position I think the NBA has, but then baseball also grosses more money than baseball. How far is the gap between the NBA and the Major League Baseball, would you say?
The NBA feels like it really exploded with the ability to market their players. And just every team has a superstar, and you're interested in that superstar, even if you're not interested in that team. And Major League Baseball, it feels like it's getting there from that aspect, because you've got these young superstars that are not just, you know, American-born stars. Now you have superstars from Japan and Puerto Rico and the Dominican Republic. The more you get these entities, players, that almost live on their own. Doesn't matter where they play. It just matters, I want to watch them. That's what helps, because Major League Baseball feels like it is much more siloed to each individual team. You're a fan of the team, and you're not necessarily as much a fan of baseball, except for, you know, when the postseason comes around. But for the rest of the year, you only care about your team. NBA, yes, you care about your team. This is my take on it. NBA, you care about your team, but you also care about the super. You care about the star players. You care about LeBron James. You care about just, you know, Steph Curry. Go, you know, Kevin Durant. Doesn't matter where they're playing. I feel like baseball's getting there with players like Acuna and Soto and Ohtani. It doesn't happen overnight. These guys got to be, you know, we got to be well deep into their careers, and we got to keep the replenishment of talent coming. And baseball feels like it's doing that. And the rule changes have been great. A World Series like this, where you'll market the game with two of the biggest markets, two of the biggest teams, baseball's on the rise. No doubt about it.
I thought you were going to ask him if he likes the idea of having a bye week in fantasy football, since we were just talking about that as well. You know, for the managers, the boys.
You're really hurt that I
sit
hate
back
that idea.
And just sit back and kind of evaluate where the team is at, Jim. I mean, you know, just glancing over our records this year in the league that we share together, and I could use a week off. I don't know how you feel.
Oh yeah, I could use a couple weeks off. I'm getting cooked this year. I need a week off leading up to the trade deadline. Has that already passed? I know the football trade deadline's right around the corner. I need to make some trades and start trading players for draft picks next year, because this year was an absolute wash for the old Bills Mafia crew in the fantasy league.
Appreciate the time, Jim. Man, enjoy the rest of your week, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, guys. You too.
You got it. Jim Riley, Barreled Up Podcast, Ball Cap Sports. I knew Jim would be on my side, and he needs some time. I need some time. Every now and then, as a fantasy manager, you just need to take a step back. You need some time to evaluate that bye week.
The bullpen for the Yankees.
That's the difference, right?
That's the difference, yeah. Like, if Cortez can suck it up and be that lefty, but here's the thing, and I would advise any Yankee fan, Manaea won game two. And Shohei looked at it, and Shohei got him in game six. So, like, if you're going to wheel out Hill or the lefty the first time around and you have success, that doesn't mean that Ohtani's not going to figure out the second time around.
Man, it's going to be a fun series, obviously. Remember last year, the series between these two when Judge hurt his foot?
Yeah.
Like, watching it then felt like, okay, this is a preview of something bigger to come. And I feel like it's all coming to fruition here starting on Friday.
And he brings up an obvious point that I think we kind of gloss over, but you got the two best teams. We complain. Heck, I complain all the time. Hey, the playoffs are too big. They're too this. We're not getting the best. This is the best in both leagues.
And it doesn't happen too often in Major League Baseball. So let's buckle up and get ready for that ride. It all gets underway Friday, the World Series between the Dodgers and the Yankees, and Jim Riley of the Barreled Up Podcast stopping by to give us a little preview. Happy Hour is next on The Fan. The Chiefs make a trade for DeAndre Hopkins. You woke up to that breaking news. We have reactions to that. And Gene, if we have time, I wanted to bring this up too. It's not really a Bills story, but there is a Bills angle into this story. We've talked about Tom Brady being a part owner of the Raiders now officially.
So he's on the broadcast this week?
He's on the broadcast
this
week. Okay,
so he's doing Bills and Seahawks.
Yes.
Okay.
And there are some rules with Tom Brady as an owner that we've talked about, where he can't have the same kind of access that most broadcasters would have because, let's face it, he's got an interest. He's a part owner of the Raiders. However, there are a couple of inconsistencies, and some are pointing out that this rule maybe doesn't even exist. Like, it might just be a Tom Brady thing. We could dive into this a little bit here because okay. I think it does relate to the Bills and what they want to try and get accomplished this week when they travel to Seattle. We'll get a round of shots and we'll get the last call. Your calls welcome at 866-4326, 585-866-4FAN.
You're listening to the Sports Bar with Danger and Battaglia on 95.7 FM and AM 950, The Fan, Rochester.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.